So, hello and welcome to the People in Flow podcast. I'm joined this week by Richard Summerfield, somebody I've known for about 15 years now. And we have a shared desire for a positively engaged workplace, led well and managed in a coordinated and collaborative way, where people can contribute their best and see and feel that they belong. Richard wrote his book, Loving Leadership, to really go beyond other leadership books and provide simple actions that leaders can take to make that happen. And within that, that whole sense of everybody being getting a sense of belonging, there is true inclusivity, something we'll look at with Richard in a moment. So, Richard, perhaps you could just tell us a little bit about your background before we get going.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, nice to speak to you, Neville. My background is over 20 years now in HR roles, and worked in a number of sectors, mainly banking, but also insurance, private banking, technology, legal firms. So quite a broad range of industries. But I soon found my passion 20 years ago when I first started in Barclays, working within their HR graduate program. So I have spent I've spent my career dotting around from both generalist and specialist HR roles, and joined sort of boardroom type of roles about 10 years ago. So I've been sitting on both sides of the board, actually, both as a chief HR officer and also as non-exec directors for businesses over the last 10 years. And really, you know, throughout my whole career, the bit that has piqued my interest the most is seeing how to get the best out of people, but also seeing how you can get that wrong. So when we unpack, we get into flow and we get into some of the concepts within my book. The key piece is around trying to point out some areas of techniques that leaders could do to unlock the performance and the potential of their staff in a way that they probably haven't been able to do before. There's no rocket science in there, but actually some of the simplest things to do are the hardest to actually execute. So that's what I believe we're going to get into in this conversation.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Richard. And what I like about it in terms of your categorizing it into sort of eight simple techniques. Once mastered, those techniques are turned into strengths. They help leaders to grow as themselves.
Absolutely.
So I think the easiest way is to go through it in the way that you've written it, because right up there, right up in front, is the two words: give trust.
Yeah.
Tell me what you mean by give trust.
Okay. Well, if we break it down, it's from a human relationship point of view, the strength of the relationship that anybody has person to person is enormously different if you feel that you trust each other. And that might sound quite simple. And actually, it's something that people are pretty good at doing outside the workplace. So a typical human tends to find the people that they trust within their friends, within their circles of who they deal with outside of work. But within work, it is an area that some leaders are nervous over and some leaders sort of lack the skills. Now, the reason that it's called give trust is based on a really clear principle that you have to give trust to get trust. So if you want that extra mile from somebody, if you want that individual to really feel connected and to believe that you care about them, then you can't just expect them to blindly follow you. And what I've learned over the years and practiced and seen in action is that the leader more often than not needs to make the first move in that, and that can be sharing something about themselves or about the situation or the problems and issues at work that help the people that work with them or for them get a much clearer picture of what's going on. Now, in many cases that involves the leaders sort of sharing personal information or sharing information with people that is corporately sensitive. But what you find is that the individual feels trusted and has a lot more respect and will guard that trust. And I would say in my 20 plus years, I have never had that trust betrayed to an extent that it's limited my own career. So I've been trusted by other leaders and have given back heaps more than I would have done. And equally, I have shared more about myself and about the circumstances and the hidden wiring in organizations with people that are working for me and with me. And it has not backfired yet. So therefore, all I can do is point to the fact that as a tool, don't be guarded. Don't worry about demarking personal life from work life. Let a bit of yourself in, share information, and it will be okay. You don't need to worry.
Yeah. No, that's super, Richard. And you know, it's an interesting thing because you were talking there about corporate life, and we've seen in the last in the last 12 months, we've worked with various organizations and increasingly a number of sort of small and medium-sized businesses, very often where the leader has a great stake in the business and therefore has greater risk. Yeah. And we've seen examples where, you know, there is very little of giving trust to people, and we've seen examples where there's been a great deal of giving trust to people.
Yeah.
I think what we're finding now in this period of uncertainty and crisis is that the latter, the company where, or the organizations we've worked with, where even where there is high risk involved, where they have given trust and they have trusted other people to provide the skills that they've brought to that business, mm. and the knowledge and the decision making, they are in a stronger position.
Yeah.
And it is difficult. You know, I've had a couple of people just only last week. We had somebody who was effectively saying about the people, well, they'll kind of just need to do as they're told right now.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
missing the point that they had the answers already.
Yeah.
And we worked with, had a discussion with another leader who effectively was having Zoom team meetings where the entire organization was contributing to the solving of issues that they had right now.
Yeah.
And he was saying that they were getting so much energy from that.
Yes.
Energy you can't replace in the physical workplace, but still energy all the same, where there was a joint commitment to solving and to creating opportunities right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Which I think sort of backs up what you say, and there are a number of people who will doubt it, but the examples are there for all to see.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Absolutely agree.
Fantastic. And it kind of links where you give trust to other people to where you've now talked about, and right now particularly, confidence is there for all to see, you know, where people give trust, they're getting it repaid, whatever the size of company, whatever the situation.
Yeah, absolutely agree, and I would encourage all leaders to do that.
Yeah, fantastic, and it leads neatly into your second sort of technique and strength, which is to care for others, particularly relevant right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that very much so. I mean, the caring element is at the core of the whole book, and it's probably the one that might make some leaders feel the most uncomfortable. The sort of business case for this is that I would argue that genuinely caring for people is one of the most commercial leadership behaviors you can have, because when people feel cared for, you get an entirely different relationship and contribution. And if I sort of unpack what I mean by caring for others, I think the sort of the first element of that is around pretty much treating your workers and co-workers like a family like an extended family. Now, that is quite a big statement because clearly they're not your family. But if you just imagine what it is like to treat people like family, what does that mean? It means that you care about their well-being. It means that you care about how they're feeling. It means that you look after them. It means that you give them opportunities to thrive. And you know, all of these sorts of things that you would apply within your own household and your own group of friends, I'm suggesting that applying that to work could be really powerful. And when I talk about worrying about their well-being, that's all dimensions of the individual. So that is around their physical well-being, their emotional well-being, their financial well-being. There are so many, you know, there are so many elements to that. But if as an individual you feel that your boss or your manager genuinely cares about you as a person and values you as a person to the extent that you are aware of whether they're having a good day, whether they're having a bad day, whether they are enjoying the work that they're doing, whether they're interested in doing different things, can entirely change the dynamic. Now, there's a couple of reasons why some leaders may struggle with that. One is that they may not naturally, they might find that in an uncomfortable type of relationship.
Yeah.
They may really prefer to not go there because to some extent it may also need the leader to start giving a bit of information about themselves as well, and they may not want that relationship. So that's one of the issues. The other issue as to why leaders don't do it is because it's hard to maintain. Because if you are authentically caring about an individual, you don't just ask them and show them that you're interested one day and then not get in touch with them for the next 2 weeks, right? Can you imagine like not talking to your daughter for 2 weeks? You know, you would always be checking in.
Yeah.
So there is and if we live in this world now with so much pressure on a leader and a line manager's shoulders to create enough time in your cadence, in your daily, weekly cadence, to keep up that level of care, to keep up that level of interest in the people that work for you, especially if you've got, you know, not three or four people, if you've got 30 or 40 people that maybe, you know, work very closely with you.
Or more.
Requires an enormous amount of emotional investment and time. And that's why as a leader, you could go, do you know what? It's just easier not to go there, and it's easier to just keep this on a transactional level and just try and get through the day.
Yeah.
So I would it's one of the hardest but most powerful things that I think a leader can do.
I think you're absolutely right. It's at the core of everything. And it's not the you know, you can spot the leader who has read the book or just come back from a course who suddenly is interested for an afternoon.
Yeah.
And feels very uncomfortable in asking. Yeah. I mean, you can see so there needs to be a naturalness about it. Which you know, what one can learn. There is a balance, though. You know, Stan Slapp, just over 20 years ago, pointed out that you spend just over half of your living time traveling back from, or thinking about work than anything else.
Yeah,
and half of anything else is sleeping.
Yeah.
So welcome to your personal life. Welcome to everybody's lives. Let's make let's make it so that we care. And that care helped there be that sense of belonging, which eventually moves into a commitment to the organisation beyond the team, which is what you're really looking for as a leader. In our inflow leadership program, we talk about consistency, clarity, and care. And that care you've nicely summed up there, but you also touched on the need for that to be consistent. And I think the whole of the UK is looking for clarity right now.
They are indeed.
But it's absolutely there. And as such, you know, and some of the positives that have come out of now is we are seeing leaders, you know, being vulnerable and there being a respect for that. And that's your kind of your next strength, really, your next technique. Talk to me just briefly a little bit about being vulnerable.
Yes. I mean, I think the vulnerability has been particularly accentuated in these unprecedented times.
Yeah.
The vulnerability I want to sort of get it. It's not around weakness. So there is a bit of an allergic reaction to the word vulnerability in terms of from certain leadership theories around, well, if you're showing too much vulnerability, would people think you are weak? Would people start worrying about whether you can lead the charge, you know, or whether, you know, so when I talk about vulnerability, it's very much around showing an honest and human side and being prepared to say, I mean, fundamentally being able to admit when you're wrong.
Yeah.
So if you have done something and it's a mistake, then have the strength to say, I was wrong on that one. I'm sorry about that. And just, it may sound really simple, but so many leaders find other ways of not saying that or trying to explain it with data as to why. You know, but actually, if you've made a mistake, just say, I made a mistake. Another big area of vulnerability, which a lot of leaders suffer from, is how to say, I don't know. So if you think about many sort of leadership interactions, it's you don't often hear leaders say, "I don't know." They may answer some questions really robustly, and other questions they might sort of waffle or throw in some data, and it may or may not be validated. But there is a fear amongst a number of leaders for saying, "I don't know," which in many cases is rooted in childhoods and the schooling that probably they went through, where that wasn't an acceptable answer. You know, I don't know isn't a good answer as you're going through. I think it's very different in education now. I think education's changing incredibly. But certainly if you are of certain generations, that was never an acceptable answer. And it's hard to rewire and believe that by saying, I don't know, that people would still have respect for you, but actually they do. And then the last element of being vulnerable, if I sort of unpack that word, is around not taking yourself too seriously, to the extent that you could take some risks on being quite self-deprecating at times about yourself, because it's quite disarming. Because what you don't realize necessarily as a leader is the power of what you say and your actions. And one of the most powerful ways of helping people to feel that they are on an even playing field with you, they can trust you, and they you know, actually you're very similar to them, is to sort of make jokes about yourself or about your weaknesses, or, you know, to sort of, I don't know, let's say you miss details, or let's say you forget to turn up for appointments, or let's say you're late for, just be honest with it. And just, because what it invites people to do is actually think, oh, this leader's not indestructible, they're not perfect. And actually it is okay to have a few vulnerabilities and weaknesses and not feel that you have to present yourself as this sort of perfect person.
And it links very closely with one of your other techniques, which is around being sociable, the ability to, yeah, to have some fun you know, not dodging the non-work stuff.
Yeah, I think so. I think having fun is something that has in many cases been lost in organisations, and actually, crikey, to your point, Neville, that we spend over half our time in work. If we can't find a way of having fun, then that's a bit of a grind. Now, the ability to have fun in work lies with the leadership of an organization creating a culture that gives people permission to have fun. And it is really as simple as that. So if you've got a super serious CEO and executive board that don't turn up at any of the sort of wider corporate events, don't put any color or interest in their emails and communications, it's going to set the tempo. Individuals in the business are going to go, well, do you know what? If I want to have fun, if I want to have a bit of a laugh, I can't do that in work. I need to sort of segregate that and do that outside of work.
Right. Or I need to go and work somewhere else.
Yeah, or I need to go and work somewhere else. Yeah. And there are organisations that have been very brave, and without naming one of them, one of my previous organisations, which had over 40,000 people worldwide, created a new corporate strategy. And one of the three strategic strands was having fun. I kid you not, a big global bank. And they were at a point, it was post-recession, post the financial crisis, sorry, in sort of 2008, and having fun, and it pervaded the whole organization, and we all had permission to have fun. And of course, you know, that nobody broke that. You know, it was a bit of a leap of faith inviting the staff to do that, but it made quite a big cultural point that had a very positive impact on the culture of that organization.
Yeah. It did. It was I can remember elements of that, and there were unfortunate aspects to that where you know, there were departments where managers would suggest you could have fun between X time and Y time. And made it a performance indicator. And so, you know, we still have a lot to learn about these kind of things, and it comes back to that natural, positively energized workplace.
Yes.
Whereby coming back to the points you've already made around giving trust and caring and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And then the fun will flow, and it will follow, and it will be acceptable.
And it'll be natural.
Yeah. Fantastic. And there are a couple of others which I'd like to sort of combine together.
Yeah.
Where shining a light and creating magic moments.
Yes.
Yes. Talk to me a little bit about those.
Well, shining a light is one of the most powerful things that a leader can do to get the best out of people. It's around really calling out a good job. It's taking the focus off themselves and pointing it. I mean, literally, imagine yourself holding a light, and it's giving people in the organization recognition for a job well done. And the key piece that underpins shining a light is around the need to be proactive. You won't have, as a leader, with all the stuff going on, you don't just have falling into your lap every day, somebody nudging you saying, say thank you to that person, give an award to that person, that team's done a great job. Your radar has to be switched on all the time to be looking at ways in which you can help people and teams and departments feel valued, because as a leader, by doing that, the impact that that has on the individual, the team or the department is disproportionate to anybody else giving them that feedback. So the shine a light piece is really around letting others have their contributions recognized.
And it's a big piece. Yeah, and of course there is always more than one way of achieving something.
Yeah.
More than one way of getting a result. And if you give trust, then you have to allow that, whatever the approach they're taking, to develop. It is no good pretending to give trust and then saying, but I want it done this way, in exactly these steps, in exactly this way.
Yes.
So you may as well do it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's where a lot of people still are at when it comes under pressure.
Yeah,
I'll do it myself because it's quicker. Well, it may not be actually, because there may be a better way.
Yes.
Unless you let go.
Yeah.
From time to time, you're never going to find out whether there is a better way.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And just to your earlier question, so the link between shine a light and create magic moments is quite strong. I'll give you a bit of a story. I'll give you a bit of an example, because from in each of the chapters of the book, I do refer to both an academic expert, and as Neville, as you know, you were one of those. And I also refer to somebody that I believe really lived and breathed that particular in the role that they do. And I and my case study for Create Magic Moments was a lady called Beatrice Tolman, who's the president of Red Carnation Hotels.
Yeah.
And she was an incredible exponent of this particular technique. And I'll give you an example of a couple of things that she did. And the first thing is that Red Carnation Hotels have got 17 hotels worldwide. She tracked all of the TripAdvisor feedback, and wherever any customer of Red Carnation Hotels worldwide called out an individual of a particular hotel on the TripAdvisor feedback, Beatrice would write to them or call them to say thank you. And you know, so every single, you can imagine the volume of feedback that they got. The other thing that she did is that she kept, so Red Carnation Hotels have over 2,000 employees. She kept a database of all 2,000 employees. And every time she interacted with them, she would increase the database with, as she found out personal information about them. And at Christmas time, she hand wrote a Christmas card to all 2,000 employees, but also they would all get a present, and that present was bespoke for the individual. So, for example, if someone was gluten-free, they would get was really, now I'd heard about this and I didn't believe it until I spoke to her. And I said, Beatrice, I've heard, you know, because they were the top best company to work for. So this was on the Sunday Times top companies to work for. Red Carnation were in the top five year on year on year, and they won it several years. And after talking to Beatrice, she was like, so no, she explained how she did it. And she said it takes up an enormous amount of her time, but when every individual in the business gets something from her bespoke that makes a point and connects with them on a human level, it had an enormous, and then they gave that service to the customer because they felt valued themselves.
And coming back to your earlier points, it's about caring about the others and caring about the people that work with you and for you. And also, the interesting thing is, because that's all quite well planned, well done, there's a process and so on, but actually beyond that there was spontaneity.
There was, but just to pick on that, spontaneity is really crucial. So as a leader, I encourage you to look for opportunities to spontaneously create magic moments for your staff. No one's going to tell you the right time and the right solution, but really, there are no rules. As long as you're not breaking any laws in the process, you should take a leap of faith as a leader to think about how you can do something very special for your people at the right time, catch them at a time that they've done something well, or they've reached a level of long service, or it's their birthday or something, but do something special that they weren't expecting, and it can have a very long-lasting impression on them.
And that example you just gave us also indicates one of your other techniques, which is really listen.
Yeah.
And that concludes today's episode. Join us next week for episode 2. See you soon.